Alonzo Bowden, I want to welcome you to episode 344 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? Man, I wish I could stir up the controversy Rogan has right now. How many listeners would I have? I think Joe averages 11 million listeners a week. So, yeah, good for Joe. Listen, let's jump right in on this, because in my opinion, this whole thing, Spotify is loving it. They're loving the controversy. They're loving the free publicity. If anyone has been under a rock for the past week or two, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, and some other artists have said they will pull their music from Spotify. They're upset because Joe Rogan's supposed misinformation on COVID. Now, I'll tell you where I stand on this, and you've heard me say this before. I'll say it again. I've known Joe for 20 years, over 20 years. Been friends with Joe, done stand-up with Joe. I've been on Joe's podcast. In my opinion, which is what I'm giving, my opinion, Joe is right on brand. And Joe talked about this, and he did a video in response, and he said that he interviews all people, all sides. He talks to everyone. He doesn't plan ahead what he's going to say or what he's going to ask or whatever, which he said maybe he should do a little better job in preparation. But that's all up to him. But listen, Joe Rogan talks to people on both sides of every issue, and he talks to extremists and this and that. He's talked to a couple of doctors who go against the grain on COVID, who think that, you know, he said his thing about if you're young and you're healthy, you don't need to be vaccinated or whatever. It's Joe. Okay, this is why I say that, because if you know Joe, or if you follow Joe for any length of time, you know that Joe Rogan believes in a lot of alternative medicine things, a lot of supplements, different treatments. That's who he is. It's part of, he calls his podcast the Joe Rogan Experience. That's part of the Joe Rogan Experience. It's always been that. So, getting crazy over this, I don't buy it. I don't understand it. If you know who he is, and the other thing is, and Joe says this all the time, and I fully agree, Joe Rogan is not a doctor. If you get your COVID advice from Joe Rogan or Aaron Rodgers or me or Don Lemon or whoever you want to talk about, if you're not talking to a doctor, then you're wasting your time. Go on the internet and look around and look at you know how the internet works, or maybe you don't. The internet works by algorithms. Whatever you tend to look up, it follows you, it tracks you. Make no mistake, it's tracking you at every click. And then it sends you things that support your ideas or your beliefs. So if you're an anti-vaxxer, it's going to send you a bunch of anti-vax stuff. And if you believe in science, it's going to send you science, stuff like that. If you listen to Ted Nugent, it's going to send you the craziest shit you can imagine. So from the point of view of Spotify, I think they just love this. Any controversy like this is a ton of free publicity. It was the same way with Netflix and Dave Chappelle. Tons of free publicity. Do you know how happy Spotify is when Joe Rogan is leading the news? They got $100 million invested in the guy. Joe is being Joe. That's my opinion. Joe is being Joe. And I'll take a step farther. When it talk about pulling Joe and pulling his opinions, if you're okay with that, then you have to be okay with these people who want to pull critical race theory. You have to be okay with these people who want to pull the 1619 Project. Because if we start saying, you know, you can't have an opinion I don't agree with, then you're censoring. It's the same thing. Listen, whether it's backed by science or not, it's all people's opinions, and they can all go up there, and it's up to you, me, or whoever. It's up to the individual to choose what they're going to listen to, what is reasonable, what sources, etc. So I posted on Facebook, there's a list of 50 books that they wanted to ban in Texas. 50 books. Any book that mentioned race, any book that mentioned sex, sexuality, any book that treated someone straight white men consider out of the norm. And the only people they consider in the norm are straight white women. So any book that promoted Mexicans or immigrants as or gay people, trans, black, anything like that, they wanted it gone. Anything that talked about sexuality or maturity. And remember, kids are going through adolescence and they're reading and they learn. They wanted to ban all of these books. If you say it's okay to ban Joe Rogan, then you're saying it's okay to ban these books or ban anything else that you don't agree with. Listen, is Joe promoting misinformation? I don't know. I don't know, because Joe is Joe. It's not the same as Joe Rogan as an entertainer, as a podcast host, as a comedian, as a MMA commentator does not carry the same weight as a lawmaker. Okay, it's not the same as when Ted Cruz says this bullshit, or even the Fox News hosts who claim to be journalists until they're called out on lying. Joe doesn't claim to be a journalist. Joe is a talking personality, an interviewer, and that's what he says he is. He doesn't claim to be an expert on anything. He's not telling you what to do. Okay, I'm going to stop. But that's my opinion on the whole Joe Rogan thing. Spotify is like, I don't know, 100 and something million people listening, and Joe's their guy, and good for them. On the topic of COVID, Governor Gavin Newsom does it again. This is what he did. He went to the Rams NFC championship game. He took a picture with Magic Johnson. He took his mask off to take the picture. I don't care, but he's got to know, as the governor, keep your mask on. If there's a mandate to wear masks, keep your mask on. In reality, do you take down your mask to take a picture, especially when you're outside? Sure, it's fine. But you're the governor and everyone's looking at you, and you just went through the most ridiculous recall effort, and to keep your mask on. That's the problem. It's not his mask. It's that he's an idiot for taking it off, and to take a picture in public. What the hell is wrong with him? And of course, now all the anti-maskers are like, take down all the mask mandates. We don't have to wear a mask. He didn't wear a mask. He didn't wear a mask for a minute, but it doesn't matter. No, he, and all this, you got to deal with all this stupidity again. It's just so much wasted energy. So much wasted energy. Keep your mask on, Newsom. You're an idiot. Okay? and another anti-vaxxer has done it. So Fox News had this guy. He's one of their heroes. He was an anti-vaxxer, and up in Seattle, he was a cop. He was a trooper in Seattle. And he said, he's not taking no vaccine. You can't make him take a vaccine. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. They were going to tell his story on Fox News. And yeah, he died of COVID. So they're not really mentioning him anymore. I'm not laughing at him for dying for COVID. I'm laughing at the level of bullshit. Okay, this guy, let's see, what was his name? LeMay. In October, he resigned from the state police because he didn't want to follow Washington State's vaccine requirement. They said he's an example their audience can emulate, and he's a hero and blah blah blah. Yeah, he's dead. Yeah, he was on Fox and Friends, and probably not going to be on Fox again. Yeah. They're not even mentioning him. They're not saying anything about his name or anything else. He's just gone. He served his purpose, and now he's dead. That's why I say it's a cult, because you're willing to die. You're willing to die for the cult. The cult leaders, Laura Ingraham, using you for her story, she's vaccinated. So is Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity and Fox and Friends and all those other people. So there's another one gone. Like the Queen song, another one bites the dust. I just rewatched that movie, Bohemian Rhapsody. If you haven't seen that movie about Queen, and oh man, what a great movie. What a great movie. You really need to see Bohemian Rhapsody. But as Queen famously sang, another one bites the dust. Brian Flores. Brian Flores is a former head coach of the Miami Dolphins. He's a black head coach in the NFL. He was very rare. He was interviewed by the Giants because the NFL has a rule that when you have a head coach opening, you have to interview a coach of color. And then he found out the whole thing was a sham because Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots, sent him a congratulatory telegram before his interview saying congrats on getting the job. And then Belichick realized the mistake, said, ooh, no, that wasn't meant for you. That was meant for the white coach who's already got the job that you're going to be interviewing for in a couple of days. In other words, the cat is out of the bag. The interview was a sham. So now he's suing. He's suing the Giants. He's suing Denver Broncos for doing the same thing, or assumed to be doing the same thing. He's suing the Miami Dolphins, a team that he used to coach for, because the owner of that team wanted him to lose games intentionally to move them up in the draft. For those who don't know about sports, the worse you finish in a season, the higher you get in a draft pick. In other words, if you finish last, you get first chance at the best college player coming out. And if you're second to last, you get second chance, and so on. So the more you lose, the higher you move up in the draft. The owner of Miami said, this team sucks. He told the coach to lose games. The coach said, no, I'm not going to lose games intentionally. He ended up with a winning season with a really bad team. And he was the first coach in however long to have back-to-back winning seasons with the Miami Dolphins. So, of course, he was fired. Yes, and now he's got the sham interview. So he's suing the NFL for systematic racism. Now, there's nothing new here. It's not like we don't know, okay? You had Colin Kaepernick, who the NFL kept out of football because of his stance. I didn't mean to make a pun, but because of him taking a knee, okay? We have coaches. Eric Bieniemy and Byron Leftwich are offensive coordinators. Now, again, I'm talking to people who don't know football. These are the guys who run the offense, pick the plays, coach the quarterbacks, et cetera, et cetera. Normally, if you're a good offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, your next stop is a head coaching job. Eric Bieniemy has taken the Kansas City Chiefs to 2 out of 3 Super Bowls. Byron Leftwich won the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay a couple of years ago. Neither one of these guys has been offered a head coaching job. If they were white, they would be head coaches right now. If you're a white offensive coordinator and you go to 2 out of 3 Super Bowls, they are fighting for you to be a head coach. Neither Eric Bieniemy nor Byron Leftwich has a head coaching job offer. Is it organized systematic racism in the NFL? Absolutely. How do we know? Because when they fired Gruden for his racist emails, he was the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, they said there are hundreds more emails. And if he's sending out these racist and sexist emails, he had to be sending them to someone. You don't send emails to yourself. You don't say, hey, this is listen to this joke or whatever. You don't send it to yourself. The NFL has a systematic racism problem. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, calls it a problem when he was one of the loudest voices against Colin Kaepernick until they came around, okay, until George Floyd was murdered and they were like, this looks bad. We have to pretend we respect these black people. They don't. They have no respect for them. They're players. They use them for a few years and they kick them out. There's a few random coaches. There's only one black head coach that I'm aware of, the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's been a coach for 15 years. He's never had a losing season. He's won Super Bowls. And I actually heard an interviewer there saying, should he go to the Hall of Fame? Well, what do you think? 15 years, never a losing season. Yeah, I think he should go to the Hall of Fame. But this is it. Systematic racism in the NFL? No doubt. This lawsuit, we'll see how it goes. No idea what's going to happen. The big problem the NFL has is NFL careers are very short. think the average player lasts 2 seasons or 2.3 seasons, something like that. They need the money. So they don't have the negotiating power that NBA players have. NBA players are much more organized and stand up to the owners and to the league a whole lot better. NFL players, it'd be great if they could, but a lot of them can't for various reasons. And not because they're dumb jocks or anything like that. The financial reasons, short career, et cetera, et cetera. You're trying to stay on the team. You're trying to keep your job. So you may not have time to fight in a bigger picture. There's a lot of things involved. But systematically racist? Absolutely. It's not even a, it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's not even a question. Yeah. Every bit of evidence from any side shows like, yeah, this is this is how they do things. This is the NFL way. So we'll see. Now, let's get to what I really wanted to talk about this week. The Supreme Court justice nomination. Joe Biden said that he's going to nominate a black woman for the upcoming opening on the Supreme Court. And suddenly, Fox News and Ted Cruz and all of them became anti-discrimination. They suddenly wanted things to be fair and don't look at color and don't look at gender. There's a black woman. Now, they're saying that if he gives this job to a black woman, it's strictly because of affirmative action. She's not going to be qualified, blah, blah, blah. Now, Jen Psaki, my favorite press person from the White House who handles these reporters with no problem, when one of these right-wing reporters said, hey, what about Ted Cruz saying that, you know, it's discrimination to give the job to a black woman rather than open it to anyone, Jen Psaki simply used Ted Cruz's words, you know, that he endorsed a woman. Okay, when Donald Trump said he was going to endorse a woman, Cruz didn't get mad. Cruz said during The Handmaiden, Amy, whatever the hell her name is. yeah, I'm sorry, I still can't with this Amy whatever on the Supreme Court. Why? Because she was a handmaiden. I'm not making that up. I'm not being insulted. She was, like, after college, like, that was her thing. She was that far religious extremist that she was a handmaiden. So, anyway, he had no objection. As a matter of fact, he said, this is Cruz saying that, I think you're an amazing role model for little girls. What advice would you give little girls? Reagan made a pledge to put a woman on the Supreme Court, and he did it when he nominated Sandra Day O'Connor, okay? So what this is, Jen Psaki speaking for Joe Biden, the president's view is after 230 years of the Supreme Court being in existence, the fact that not a single black woman has served on the Supreme Court is a failure in the process, not a failure or a lack of qualified black women to serve as Supreme Court justices. I will say to those assholes who dare say that there isn't a black woman qualified to be on the Supreme Court, let me tell you something. Black women, not good enough. They're too good. They're too good to have to put up with this shit. Okay? Enough of this. Black women are the strongest women, if they're the strongest people we have. Because any shit you put up with, they put up with more. If you're a woman, all of the shit you put up with, add racism to it. Because she's a black woman, so she has to put up with all the black shit too. Okay? You think it was easy for her to get to where she is if she's a nominee for the Supreme Court? Are you out of your fucking mind? Okay, I'm a black man. I do not put up with as much shit as a black woman. You know why? Because I don't have the woman shit that she has to put up with. How dare they? How dare they insult black women like that? It's fuck them. Okay. Black women, guess what? They're good enough to raise your kids. They're good enough to be on the Supreme Court. That's right. White people, black women have been raising your kids since day one. And you know what they do after they raise your kids? They go home and raise their own kids because they have to do both jobs. Okay. They have worked harder to get where they are than anything. Ted Cruz, you couldn't imagine, you couldn't comprehend the work and shit that a black woman puts up with every day. How dare you? How dare you question their qualification, you worthless piece of shit? Are you kidding me? For a black woman to go to discriminated against in high school, then she has to go to college, then she has to go to law school. The whole time they're going to be saying, oh, you're only here because of affirmative action. No, you know why she's there? Because every black kid is taught that you got to be twice as good to make it that far. Okay. Then she worked her way up through the court system, and now she might be on the appeals court and looking at a Supreme Court nomination, and you dare question her qualification when you had some man who is a fucking sexual predator who in his Senate confirmation yells, I like beer. Are you fucking kidding? Can you imagine if a black woman in a Senate confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court said, I like beer as her excuse for sexual misconduct in high school and college? Are you out of your fucking minds? How dare you? How dare you question the qualification of a black woman on the Supreme Court? They're too good for your fucking Supreme Court. Black women have put up with more shit and dealt out more compassion than you can imagine. Than you can imagine. It is an insult. It is an absolute insult. Are you kidding? Black women? Oprah? More compassion than you can imagine. Loved by everyone in America. Michelle Obama, you hated Michelle Obama. You know why? Because she was smarter than you. Vanessa Williams. Think about Vanessa Williams. You were jacking off to Vanessa Williams, and then you decided you hated her and she couldn't be Miss America, so you stripped her of the title. And what did she do? She went on to become an award-winning actress and singer. You know why? Because you can't stop a black woman. Okay, now, I have dated black women, white women, whatever. I'm not talking about that. Don't come at me with that. Loves you and I with white women. What? Don't even come at me with that shit. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the qualifications to do their jobs in a professional world, and how dare these unqualified asshat racists from Fox News, Ted Cruz, any of them, how dare they even, what do they say? Don't put their name, your name, their name in your mouth. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable. Joe Biden's absolutely right. In 230 years to not have a black woman on the Supreme Court is a crime. And here's another thing. Nobody will be more fair because nobody will know us other than maybe Justice. No, not even maybe. Justice Sotomayor understands, okay? These privileged white people can't imagine not having privilege. When these cases come up that the individual is fighting against the power, they can't understand the position of the individual. They don't understand discrimination that you have to put up with when it comes to voting rights, when it comes to going to school, when it comes to getting a mortgage, when it comes to living the American dream. They can't imagine it because they've never had to deal with it. It has never affected them or anyone they know. When Mitch McConnell sits up there and says that African Americans vote as much as Americans, he doesn't understand the insult that he just said. He doesn't care that he just called African Americans less than American, even though we've served in every war and done more for this country than his worthless fucking ass will ever do. How dare they? How dare they question the strength of a black woman? Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou is more educated and has shared more and made more of a difference than they can imagine. These assholes will dance to Aretha Franklin and say a black woman isn't qualified to do anything. They need to shit. You know what they need? Need a black woman to slap the cowboy shit out of them, which black women also did because they were raising their kids. And I had the cowboy shit slapped out of me now and then. I needed it. I actually didn't. I was very lucky. But let me... Everything that anyone has put up with in this country to build this country, to be a part of this country, the black women have had it worse. It's been more difficult for them to get to anywhere. They get paid less. They get treated worse. They're over-sexualized. I talked about this on a prior podcast and on my radio show, the sexualization of little girls. Okay, this Amy, whatever the hell her name is on the Supreme Court, Amy Handmaiden, she can't imagine what it's like to be treated as a sex object when you're 10 or 12 and then be told, well, you developed like a woman, so it was okay to rape you, even though you're a little girl. Okay, it obviously upsets me You heard that. It obviously upsets me, but it's because it's so outrageous. It's so utterly ridiculous. They don't deserve the right to even question a black woman. Qualified for the Supreme Court easily. They were qualified for the Supreme Court 100 years ago before they went to law school. They knew more about fairness. They knew more about discrimination. They knew more about the things that the Supreme Court is supposed to protect people from rather than this right-wing Supreme Court, which helps people do, okay? They're not going to say like this Republican candidate in Michigan who says that if a woman's raped, she should have the baby because who knows, it could be the next president. He wouldn't say that if the woman he raped was a woman he knew, if it was a woman who lived in his social circle or God forbid, was related to him. No, not those women. But other women, yeah, go ahead and rape them. Make them have the baby. What the hell? No, a black woman's not going to go for that. Yes, there should be a black woman on the Supreme Court. It is past time to have a black woman on the Supreme Court. And I say to the Democratic Party, don't fuck this up, okay? Don't fuck this up. Don't stretch this out past the midterm elections and lose the majority in the Senate and end up not getting this woman on the Supreme Court because Mitch McConnell thinks you should wait 3 years before you replace the Supreme Court justice. And believe me, that is exactly what he would do. Are black women qualified to be on the Supreme Court? Yes. Any one of the nominees is better than the woman on that court, Amy Handmaiden, whatever the fuck her name is. I will not look up her name. I will not look up her name. She does not deserve that respect. I don't care what you say about her background. She's a horrible person. And so is Mr. I Like Beer. Matt, I Like Beer at a Senate confirmation hearing. And you're on the Supreme Court. I said this before, I say it again. If you say I like beer during a McDonald's job interview, you ain't working for McDonald's. If you're hiring somebody, if you're in a position of hiring, and in the job interview you talk to a person about their behavior under the influence of alcohol, and they said to you, I like beer, would you hire them? No. Will we put them on the Supreme Court? Yeah. And now we dare say that a black woman, that there isn't a qualified black woman to be on the Supreme Court, that it's affirmative action? I'm done. I could keep going. I'll give you something to listen to if you have any doubts. It's called I Shall Not Be Moved. It was performed by Oprah Winfrey on a Stanley Clark album. Okay, Google I Shall Not Be Moved, Stanley Clark. I can't play it here because of the rules of YouTube and stuff like that. It's his music. Listen to it. Spoken by Oprah Winfrey to his music. It is powerful. It is moving. And you will find out the strength of black women and the history of black women in this country. Finally, okay, because I can't top that. I can't get more upset than I am over that. Guess who ain't paying their taxes? Well, apparently Nike's motto is just don't pay it. Here are some of the companies that paid no taxes. I say again, that paid no taxes last year. Charter Communications, income three. I know, total shift from the black woman thing. I don't know why. I just needed to say this, okay? Charter Communications, pre-tax income, $3.6 billion. They got a tax rebate of $7 million. Nike, income, $2 billion. Rebate, $109 million. And on and on. Dish Network didn't pay any taxes. Those of you back in New York, Con Ed. Yeah, Con Ed didn't pay any taxes. Only brought in $1.2 billion. FedEx didn't pay taxes last year. Actually, got a tax rebate of $230 million. On and on. It's amazing. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it, but they don't have to pay taxes. You do. I do. They don't. It's amazing. That's it. We got to wrap up the podcast. I am going to play another interview from my days on KBLA Radio, and today we will play the interview of Bethany Van Delft, who is a comedian from Boston, a storyteller, and a black woman. So here's my interview with Bethany from last summer on KBLA. Thank you for listening. Some shows have been added. February 11th, I will be at the Improv in Brea, Orange County, California. And February 25th through 27th, I'm going back to Denver, and I'm going to be at Comedy Works South. So I'm looking forward to that. Thanks for laughing. Thanks for listening. And have a great day. It's Black History Month. Learn something this month about us black people. Yeah, we are black people, or African Americans. That's right, Mitch. We're Americans. Best joke I heard was The Onion doing a thing of critical race theory and those who fight critical race theory. In honor of their fight against critical race theory, we're going to skip the month of February, and it is now January 31st to March 1st. Yeah, they're that stupid. They might even do it. The Onion. Wait, do you know how hard it is to parody the news today? Oh, thank you, guys. Who's paying attention? You are. You're the best. Right now, I want to introduce you to my guest. This woman is multi-talented and fantastic. She is a comedian. She is a storyteller. She is a podcaster. She is a mother. She is an ex-model. I could really keep going on everything she is, but what she is super talented, funny, and I'm so happy to have her here. Bethany Van Delft is here. Bethany, how are you?
Hi, Alonzo. Wow, when you rattle it off like that, it makes me sound interesting. Holy guacamole.
Not only are you interesting, but I will tell you this. I read your bio, and I was flattered that you put me as one of the comedians you have opened for, but I want you to aim higher. Right now, I'm telling you, I want bigger names than me on people you have worked with, all right? So
I believe that you, like, when you're writing that, first of all, writing a bio is just a crazy thing. I want somebody else to write it. I take snippets from things that other people say, and I try to keep it family friendly, but I put the people that I'm blown away that I got to open for. And I know it's kind of weird because you're like living kind of in the same environment. So, maybe it is weird, just fangirl. I don't know who to say fangirl, but
no,
you know what,
listen,
I'm saying, right?
Like, I love it.
I definitely was, wow, I got to open for Alonzo Bowden. So that's always going to be there. It's going to be there forever.
I love it. I appreciate it. And, you know, you we're in the same atmosphere. You picked a nice way to say, yeah, we're two of the black people on NPR. There's only five of us. And this, you're talking to two of us right now. So that is... which I love, and I want to get to, but speaking of your bio, okay, I saw something there that I do have to ask you about. You were a model that was kicked out of Paris, okay? I want the story right now. How do you get kicked out of Paris?
Oh, my goodness. First of all, I was raised extremely super progressive, like Marxist, Black Panther, crazy progressive. So when I sprung it on my parents that I wanted to, you know, I got this offer to go model and I wanted to go to Europe, and I know that they're progressive but didn't have the money to send me, and that I really wanted to take this opportunity, they were floored. They were like, we didn't raise you like that. Oh no, what's happening to you? You're going to get exploited. You're going to this, you're going to that. And I'm like, have some faith in the person that you raised. And know that I will not get exploited, but I will go to the Louvre and I will go to all the places I've ever wanted to see while I'm there. And so I got there with that attitude and they were not having that. So that's, first of all, that background attitude, but then also you have to be really, really young to get those deals to go model there where they bring you over and pay for stuff. And they thought I was like 19, which was too old in their,
right,
in their world, that's
they start
old.
With teenagers, right?
Oh, yes, like baby girls, like 14-year-olds. It's terrifying. But I understand the reason that they do that is that they have someone who doesn't necessarily have conviction, you know? But I was lying about my age. I was 26. I was 24 or 26 when I went, which is like a great grandmother. And I hid my passport so they
still had it at 24. Way to go, old lady.
24. I was old and fat because I was a size 6 and that was fat. So they worked with me. They also did things like they would send me on a casting and I'd get there. One for Gianfranco Ferrer, who was like big in the 90s. And I get there and the contact person just yelled at me and went, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Blonde hair, blue eyes." I didn't say N words. Like, I was like, "What? In Paris?" Like, I thought, you know, Josephine Baker went to Paris. I thought they were progressive, but they have the same problems we have here. And things like that. And then other things like a photographer, videographer slapped my butt to see how well it jiggled. And he said, the reason is this is going to be a licorice ad, but it's like a juicy licorice. So I need to see if your butt jiggles like licorice. So I had choice words for all of these people in these experiences and the agency could not stand it. So I lasted about 3 weeks and they're like, "You have to get out of here. Like, we're not keeping you. Go someplace." And I was like, "Well, I'm not going home because I'm here across the ocean. So send me to a country where they'll put up with me." And they sent me to Milan. And that was just the most amazing experience. And modeling was still not for me, but living in Milan was very awesome.
Okay. I just want to find out if you've ever heard the expression falling up, because that's what I think you did when you went from Paris to Milan. You fell up. Ladies and gentlemen, I am talking to the fantastically talented Bethany Van Delft. She is here with me. She has, again, she just does everything. I want to talk to you about doing the news for children, because that's going to be a talent we all really need coming up. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is Who's Paying Attention, the station KBLA Talk 1580. My guest, Bethany Van Delft. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention. The station is KBLA Talk 1580. The phone number, 800-920-1580. As always, I invite you to join the conversation, which I am having right now with the brilliant comedian and storyteller and journalist, Bethany Van Delft. Bethany, so I want to ask you this, because you have a very unique background, okay, in that you're... your dad was Dutch, your mom black, mm-hmm. Puerto Rican, and I like what you said about, you know, you learned being called a zebra didn't mean weird but not cool. But here's my question, because you are cool. You are, like, very cool. When did you embrace that, the fact that you were unique, and make it cool? Because I know a lot of people coming up, especially a lot of women coming up, there's nothing worse than feeling like an outsider. When did you realize, like, that was your superpower, as the kids say?
I mean, to be super honest with you, I'm really just only coming into that superpower now at this time in my life. I ended up just hanging out with a group of people who felt like on the fringe. So within our group, we all were cool with each other, and it was like us against the world, sort of, or really not even that dramatic. We just bubbled ourselves away from the rest of the world. And so I don't think I really have embraced myself as a cool or interesting or exciting entity until really recently. And I love that about aging, about getting older. I really love the way you grow into your skin and you really just start to appreciate yourself.
Right. You become more comfortable with who you are. And like, this is who I am, and this is who I'm going to be. Now, that being said, in this industry, as I well know, we are stereotyped. What stereotype did they try to project onto you? What was the expectation when you walk into a room or up on a stage?
Well, it was weird, because I think what they projected on me was being a model. But when I came in, and I was not talking about that, because that was like a very cool unexpected opportunity that I got, but I didn't identify with it. Really, I wasn't a model. I used to model. I never even said I'm a model. So when I didn't talk about that, lots of industry would say, here, I read here that you're a model. Why don't you talk about that? And I would say, oh, because like so many other interesting things are happening in the world. And then if I did try to talk about it, they would say, oh, you shouldn't talk about modeling. That's not relatable. Like most people didn't model and they don't know, they don't, can't relate to it. It makes you unlikable. And so I learned early on that different people will say different things. And the only way to get through it is to be super confident and deeply believe in what it is that I do want to say. And that took a really long time for me to allow myself to say the things that I wanted to say rather than, oh, well, what do these people want to hear? If I want this thing, what do they want to hear? If I want that thing, they want to hear something else. So
now when you talk about that, when you talk about what do these people want to hear, are you talking about people in the entertainment industry or are you talking about the audience when you're doing stand-up or storytelling?
I think when it comes to stand-up, I think it was both because, you know, you want the holy grail of things that you're supposed to want when you're a stand-up. So I wanted to say what they wanted to hear that would get me that thing. But then when I would, you know, do a show, if it wasn't in, you know, like a cool bar where it's just a bunch of my peers and we think each other is cool the way we are. If it was like at a gig someplace, with an audience that I'm not really accustomed to, I did try to figure out what it is that they wanted to hear. You know, those first bunch of years of doing stand-up. And it took, I don't know what it took really. I guess it took just being disheartened to be like, whatever, and then just start really thinking about what do I want to say? And storytelling has helped more than anything has helped my stand-up because there is no expectation of laughter. I mean, they'll laugh if you say something funny, but they don't walk in the door like, make me laugh. They walk in the door wondering, what are you all about? What's your story? And it's very, very connective. The people really want to connect with you, the storyteller, and each other. And that was like a liberating feeling to go up on a stage and not have any expectations from the audience other than hear something about my life. And that really changed, I think, the way I approach stand-up. Where I really do think about what about my life is interesting that is universal. The feeling is universal to everyone. Maybe not the exact experience. And how do I translate that into a universal story and punch it up with lots of laughs?
Oh, I love that. I love that. Especially the storytelling part because I haven't done that yet. I mean, I've done it, but not like you've done Moth Stories. You've hosted that. As mm-hmm. well as performed. Can you talk to our audience some about what that is? Because a lot of people don't know what it is. And then tell me who I got to talk to get up there. So.
Alonzo, they would absolutely die to have you. And you are a storyteller. And I love your stand-up because it's tight with laughs, but there is always a story. There's a story, there's an arc, and there's a point to it all. And they love that. And so the Moth is an organization that is dedicated to the art of storytelling. And no notes, live, in person, people telling their stories that happened to them, truthful stories and first-person stories. And it started out a while ago, and it was kind of just like a communal experience of people sharing stories, but it grew rapidly. And now there are story slams in, I believe, every major city in the United States and London and a whole bunch of cities around across Europe, cities in different countries in Africa. They have main stages, which if you are a fan of the Moth, all of the stories that you hear on the radio hour or the podcast were recorded live on a main stage. And it's just really, they're deeply, deeply committed to humans maintaining a connection, a personal connection, which I feel like we're really getting away from, you know, with Instagram and doing things for the gram and trying to, you know, paint this picture of a perfect, enviable life. They are super committed to hearing the highs and the lows and the, you know, the joy and the sorrow and just all of it. Mostly the learning, the transformation, the evolution, the respect for life. So they that being around those people and having the opportunity to not only tell the stories from my life, but them be welcomed and applauded and respected. That was very transformational for me in my life, period. But then definitely as a comedian and any of the, you know, the creative pursuits that I have. Because it really made me see that my life is valuable to people besides me or my tiny little circle, where sometimes, Alonzo, you feel this way. Sometimes it feels like our lives are not as valuable as other people's lives. So to have that affirmation, just it helps me affirm it again, like reaffirm it. And it helps me go, yes, my story is worth being told, whether that be in stand-up or storytelling or however it may come out.
This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? My guest is Bethany Van Delft, who is just a phenomenal comedian and storyteller. I love the answer you just gave because you brought up something that, you know, it's part of history, verbal storytelling. I mean, that used to be how history was passed on from one generation to the next, right? There was a storyteller in a community, in a village, in a town, whatever, and they would tell the story, and those stories would be passed on from one to the next. So I love that you brought that up. But you also brought up the genuineness of telling those stories versus social media and the life value of stories versus social media, because we live in a time now where you're judged. And to our listeners, trust me, this happens. You walk in and the first question they ask is, how many followers do you have? That's
crazy.
That's like, we don't need to know anything about you except how many followers you have. So talk about that, about the genuineness of what you do versus that, because it does get tough sometimes, right, to remember your value as a real person in a business that values followers.
It is really tough, and I really don't know what to do about it, because I don't have a lot of followers on any of the platforms, because, you know, I try to do well, and then I just am like, what am I doing? Why am I posting this life on? Why am I taking the time to take these pictures and tweet these thoughts and do these things when my kids are right here next to me, or my parents who are older now are right there? I just need to be living my life and then sharing it the best way I can. So I'm envious of the people who are excellent at social media. I want that skill, but I don't have it. And I know that a lot of the industry is looking for those followers. So I do the best I can, and I always keep this in the top of my head. I make the choices. I'm making these choices for myself, so I can't get mad. Like, I remember when I was a young comedian, and I'd be like, how did they get that? I've been doing comedy longer. Why'd they do this? Why'd they do that? The truth is, when I would stop, when I would, you know, let that envy pass and I would think about it, I'd say, oh, they're getting that because they're out 7 nights a week doing 3 shows a night, running those jokes, tweaking them, fixing them. They never say no to an opportunity, and they're just growing exponentially. And I'm not doing that. I'm staying home. I'm taking weeks off from comedy. I'm going to friends' weddings. I'm going, I'm burnt out. I can't do this anymore. So if I'm going to make choices like that, then my path is going to be very different than the people that, you know, I'm inspired by. And that's something I've just had to come to terms with. And so I remain with 3,000 followers on Instagram. I post when I think of it, when I can, and when I think it's, you know, something that maybe people are interested in. And I know the repercussions for not having all those followers, but it's a choice I'm making to just be present and to be alive and be part of my life. Does that make sense? I am not putting anyone down.
No, I don't think you are. It absolutely makes sense. Before we go any farther, just so you know, I'm keeping you longer than the half hour. Okay, I'm not even asking at this point. You're staying on. Okay, we'll do news and traffic, and you will still be here. So your kids will just they'll be hungry for another 20 minutes because mom is super interesting. So, no, I listen. You're talking to someone who has tried social media this way. I'm an old guy. I missed it. I was too young for the Tonight Show, and I'm too old for TikTok. So that just it's one of those things. And it is a matter of committing to it and doing the work. But you mentioned your kids, and you do something that is very difficult to do. The 10 News. Explain. It's a news show for kids, right? I mean, this is what you do.
Yes. To be clear, I host the show, and there are writers and producers. There's a whole team of people that make this happen.
Okay, stop. They get credits at the end of the show. You do the show, all right? I never heard Trevor Noah say, well, you know, there's some brilliant writers here, and I just happen to read them. This is your problem. This is why you only have 3,000 followers. Your writers have 4,000. Stop it. Take credit. You do
all
this.
Right. I just need to call you more with my nonsense so you could just shut it down. Do you take Blue Cross Blue Shield? You're not going to get rid of me now. Well, okay, so it is a show. The demographic we're shooting for is kids 8 to 12. And it's basically to kind of explain in age-appropriate terms the news that's going on around them.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the news and traffic for adults, and then we're going to come back, and you're going to give me the news for 8 to 10-year-olds.
Okay. Whew, okay.
New York Post, right here. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? The station is KBLA Talk 1580. As always, I invite you to join the conversation at 800-920-1580 and download the KBLA 1580 app, which is a great way to listen to all of our shows and leave messages for all of our hosts. Right now, I am talking to Bethany Van Delft, incredible comedian and storyteller and journalist. Korn, my engineer, is always on top of it. Just so you know, Bethany, whatever you're talking about, he's got the music for. So we mentioned news, and here we go with PE. And
I love it. I follow Chuck D on Instagram because, like, I'm like, we need this. We need him back.
Yeah, definitely. That's a voice. Yes, that is a voice that we definitely need. And you talk about being ahead of your time. You know, the stuff that Public Enemy was talking about in the 80s and 90s. Now everybody's like, hey. They were right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So talk to me about the 10 News. You were saying that it's news, but you put it into terms that young children can understand.
Yes. And so the reason I joined the team is because, like I said, growing up the way I did, we were listening to news that kids our age were not listening to. We knew about so many things that kids our age didn't know about. You know, my parents went on civil rights marches and they experienced extreme violence, ended up in prison, all kinds of things. So we knew of the things that were going on. We were going to demonstrations when we were young. And our parents really spoke to us in real plain speak. And I give them credit for it, but I did end up with tons of anxiety. So I do feel like there's a middle ground, you know. The kids should know what's happening in the world, but there is a developmentally appropriate way to bring it to them, you know. The other extreme that I saw happen in college was I would meet these people my age, you know, in the 18, 17, 18, 19, who were sheltered their whole life, didn't really know a lot about racism, or, you know, there are the people that said, oh, I'm not racist. Racism doesn't exist anymore. Why do you talk about that? Who their eyes were like ripped open, and they saw the true, some of the real horrors of the world at that age, and kind of went bonkers, protesting and fighting about everything and demonstrating. But they were so overwhelmed with with just grief and surprise that this was going on and they had no idea, that to me, they weren't super effective in their activism at that time. And then as they got older, they got married, they had kids, and they settled back in a, you know, an environment that's pretty much like they grew up in. And so their activism kind of fizzled out. And I feel like that's what happens if you're raised not knowing the truth about this country that we live in, the good and the bad. So the 10 News, we try to address what's going on around kids. You know, they see their parents watching the news, and they have, you know, they get to see the news all on their own now with their phones and on social media. So we try to address what's going on in the world at a developmentally appropriate level. So when George Floyd was murdered, I thought it was important that my kids knew what was happening, you know, and I didn't tell them the gory details, but we watched the protests so they could ask questions and we could talk about it. You know, this man was killed, you know, by people who were supposed to be protecting him. And that's the truth of the country that we live in. And the people out in the streets yelling and protesting, they're grief stricken about it, and they want things to change. And my kids are like, can that change things? And I say, absolutely. Every change that we've ever had in this country has come from that type of protest. So it's my 5-year-old and my 9-year-old are now, they have this seed in their head. Without me bringing them to the protest, which I wouldn't have anyway because it was in the pandemic, and I have a child who is high risk. But without bringing them and putting them in harm's way, we're still actively involved in it and know what's going on. So they grow up with this sense of, this is a great place to have been born, and we have a lot of opportunity here, but there is a lot that needs to change, and there's even more opportunity that can happen for even more people, and the only way to get it is to speak up about it. So we try to do that at the 10 News, and with also lots of fun things that kids want to hear about on their own. Like, we follow the video game trends and the movie premieres and books, you know, kids' books. And I got to talk to an astronaut. That was the coolest thing in the world. We talked to paleontologists. It was so cool. I spun out of control. He was telling me about flying up into space for the first time, and I started humming Rocket Man. I didn't even know I was doing it. And he's like, are you singing Rocket Man? And I'm like, I sure am. So sorry, sir. And he's like, I love it.
That is fantastic. I mean, you packed so much into that. You know, for one thing, I'm just going to ask, you know, since you are used to talking to 8 and 10-year-olds, perhaps you can help us with Congress and the anti-vaxxers. Maybe you can speak in a language they understand. And
well, if only.
But no, it is that is fantastic. But speaking about your parents being involved in protests and being involved in the movement, that connects you to it, and the way you're now teaching your children about it, maybe not as connected, maybe not as much at risk, but still understanding. But what you said, if you're teaching that to children, I think it's so fantastic that there are fantastic opportunities in this country, and at the same time, we're not perfect. Why does that message anger so many people? And I'm talking about the, you know, education, the 1619 Project, critical race theory, et cetera. That simple message that you're teaching children, why does that just, people get so angry at the thought of we're not perfect?
I try really hard to understand what they're going through and empathize with them. And I, you know, what I think, you know, part of it has to do with is, imagine someone telling you that everything you believed is not true, that your whole history that you were taught and you believed in is completely not true. That's mind blowing. So that's the first thing I think is happening with some people, which is a really great argument for teaching real history in school. But also, if, you know, I wonder if those people are so isolated in their own homogenous communities that when they look out onto the TV and they see these really angry and just devastated and grief-stricken Black people and brown people protesting, saying that we want change, I wonder if it's scary for them. If it's scary, like, do they think we're coming for them? You know, maybe some of them do understand that was part of the history that, you know, their ancestors came for us. Or maybe they think that there isn't enough to go around. There isn't enough wealth and opportunity to go around, and that if we get ours, they won't have theirs anymore. Like, I'm trying to see it from their shoes, because I don't think there's a way to communicate or cross the bridge with people that are fighting this without trying to understand how they're seeing it. Although I lose patience for that. At times I'm just, you know, like, whatever, we just have to take what we need. But I also am trying to figure out, how would that feel if we were told our whole history was a lie?
Well, you touched on something, and this is what the politicians use, is that fear. They continually use that fear that they, and when I talk about they and other, to me, other is everyone, you know, Black, Brown, the LGBTQ community, women, anyone who's not that straight white male or all American, right, whatever you want to, they're coming to get you, and they are coming to take yours and this and that. And for them, for a lot of them, it was very simple to believe. I mean, you joked about racism ending. Their thing, and remember hearing it, well, Barack Obama got elected, so racism is over. Like, that was a simple explanation to it. And I don't know what Barack Obama was doing that he didn't end it right then. I think he was going to their house to get their guns. I think that's what it was. But
he was going to get their guns, and he was trying to convert them to Muslim.
That's right.
And he was vacationing with Bo. He was vacationing in the vineyard with Bo. Not doing his job.
Definitely not. Definitely not. You are doing yours. This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? And at this point, my guest, who has other things to be doing, but I won't let her go, is Bethany Van Delft. Bethany, I love talking to you. And the next thing I'm going to ask you about, and it's a simple topic, just being a Black woman and the issues you deal with and how to solve all of them. So she's going to cover that when we come back. And that's an easy one.
Oh, super easy. Got it. Nailed it.
This is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? The station is KBLA Talk 1580. Right now, my guest is Bethany Van Delft. Bethany, you see what I mean about corn? If you mention it, he's going to play it. So to my listeners, he's playing Rocket Man, because that was Bethany's in-brain theme song while talking to an astronaut. Would that be an accurate description?
Yes. It spilled out of my brain into the air.
So, and you know, it would be another hour just on this one question, but we have this going on. Simone Biles, Sha'Carri Richardson, we had the ongoing thing with Kamala Harris, the debate over the soul cap, a woman's hair cap for swimming, and this... Black women seem to be coming at Black women in so many ways, so many directions. What is going on, Bethany? What's this about?
They've always been coming at Black women, always. The difference is now we have social media and we hear every instance of it, and people are listening. And so what news outlet would have ever picked up the story about the swim cap for natural hair in the past, like 20 years ago? Who would have picked that up? Nobody. Nobody would have picked that up. We'd have heard about it as like a side item in Jet magazine or something, right? But the major news outlets would never have talked about it. So for better or for worse, the events of last summer, have gotten people who are truly, genuinely surprised and moved by what Black and Brown people have gone through in this country, have gotten them, their eyes opened, and they are listening. And so now, this is what I think anyway. This is Bethany's making up stuff now. This is my piece. I think that now that there are people listening and these news outlets see that people are listening and see that these are stories that people want to hear, they're pushing these stories now. But that stuff has always been going on all the time. I could go on forever about this too, but when have people not been coming for Black and brown women? So I think the difference is now, again, that people are listening, and also you hear the voices of women resisting it, which you didn't hear the voices of women resisting it before. History, the way they teach it now, picks and chooses whose voice you get to hear. So you get to hear about Rosa Parks, but you don't get to hear about Fannie Lou Hamer, right? You get to hear the stories that they, I don't want to say watered down, but the stories, the way they edit them for mainstream
learning. No, I know what you mean. It's more palatable, and it's almost like cleaner, with a happy ending that they can put on the end of the story. But is this empowering? Like you talked about, they wouldn't have talked about the soul cap 20 years ago. Would Simone Biles be able to say, hey, I'm not doing this, I'm not risking my body for your entertainment right now because it's a mental strain on me, et cetera? Is it improving?
She would have been crushed. That would have been career-ending before. So I think things are changing. She's kept all of her endorsement deals. They're supporting her. The fact that she got to take her rest and she's going to compete tomorrow night. The fact that she felt empowered and confident and self-possessed enough to step down, step back, and take that time. Yes, things are changing, I think. I mean, I teeter on the fence of, you know, things are changing and it's great, and anger that it really should not have taken this long. Like these incremental changes, it's sad that we have to celebrate them to the degree that we do because things have been so bad for so long. But I do think things are changing, and I think it's just up to people to keep speaking up, which is really, it's just too bad that the burden of change is put on the backs of the people who are oppressed. But that's how every change has ever happened. There's never been a group of people oppressing another group of people and gone, hey, you know what? Time's up. We're going to stop this right now. Like that's
That would be nice. That would be nice.
It'd be lovely.
This is Alonzo Bowden with Bethany Van Delft. And when we come back, she is going to tell you how to find her everywhere online and how to increase her social media presence. Bethany, where can everyone find you and follow you and find out what you're doing next?
Instagram, I'm Bethany Van Delft across all platforms. Bethany Van Delft on I post the most on Instagram when I have shows coming up. If you're in the Boston area, I do a monthly show called Artisanal Comedy, and our focus is on, I don't like the word marginalized voices. The focus is on interesting, unique, amazing voices. If you're in the Boston area, August 24th at 7 p.m. at Dorchester Brewing Company. And other than that, I am slowly trying to get my mask self out into the world and get back on the road and start doing things. It is slow. Slow.
Yeah, it is, but I am glad you're coming back. I'm so glad to have you here. I've learned so much. It all started when a woman got kicked out of Paris. I mean, that's the whole thing, when a young model who wasn't as young as they thought she was and wasn't a model, even though she played one on the runway, was kicked out of Paris.
Well, the next time we're talking, I will tell you how I made Giorgio Armani laugh. I did not get booked for his show, but I indeed made him laugh. And that was like, maybe this isn't the job for me. Maybe there's another job waiting for me.
That sounds like a moth story. That sounds like a turning point or a moment when you make a Giorgio Armani laugh. Just tell me this. When you make him laugh, does he give you a discount? Just 10% off, 20%, any...
I wish I was like that level of hustler, and I would have brought. I wish I could have brought that up to him at that time. I was just so floored that he laughed, and I realized, wow, like booking the show would not have made me as giddy as him just laughing at me, like spit take laugh at me.
I am not at all surprised he laughed because you were absolutely hilarious. Thank you for joining me, ladies and gentlemen. Bethany Van Delft, comedian, storyteller, podcaster, news anchor. Thank you so much, Bethany.